You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today's show is the United States of Anxiety. 40 million people in the U.S. right now are getting treated for anxiety.
Is that 40
huge? Million people. That's 40 million adults. One in five adults in the U.S. has anxiety every year, meaning they experience it throughout the year. It doesn't mean it's 100% of the time, but 40 million people experience it. And that's way up. That turns out to be about 30% of teens and adults who report being anxious.
It's a huge number.
It used to be about 10% in the 1980s.
Now what is the percent?
What was it? 30% of teens and adults.
Wow.
Yeah, so three times as many. Now, maybe there's a lot more help available.
More data.
Or is it the prevalence of therapy and drugs that promotes people to seek out therapy and drugs? Is it the publicity on social media and news? Is it what's going on in our environment today? Is it a combination of forces?
Yeah, maybe it's many components.
Like a cocktail. A cocktail of components.
Yeah.
So we were talking about this. I think that a couple of things happen is that there are things that in society make us anxious, of course.
Yeah.
But now that there's therapy for it and now that there's drugs for it, we can seek help and get assistance. Whereas maybe in the 1980s, it was seen as less open, like, oh, you were looked down upon if you were anxious. But now it's like, hey, we need to help people.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that, couldn't it?
Yes. We have more open information and people have more easy to get data than before.
So is it more acceptable, do you think, to be, hey, I'm seeing a therapist, I'm taking medicine for anxiety?
Mm-hmm.
So it could be, one is that we are actually helping people, and the other is we may be just supplying them with crutches that actually doesn't help them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually today's show. We want to talk about the difference between helping people and just masking the pain.
Mm.
So there's a lot that we want to get through. I believe that 19% of those, like say that overall there are so many people on seeking therapy for anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe the number is, and we were talking about different percentages, 30% of adults. Let's just say it's 23% of the population. 19% are taking medicine. They are on anxiety medication. 13% are in therapy. There are more on the medication than are in therapy.
Wow.
So, which we were talking about, why is that? And we're just, what is that called? Supposing. We're theorizing some thoughts. One is maybe the root cause of anxiety is difficult to put a finger on.
Take a time, take a many sections, so maybe it's better take the pill.
Far easier to prescribe something for anxiety.
Versus the digging and digging in many sessions in the therapy. So we don't have time for that.
Also, let's flip it around. Do you think potentially people are saying, you know what? I know my friend. They're taking anxiety medication. They're feeling better. I want to get that anxiety medication.
And I need to go to the doctor.
Well, they go to the doctor and they are anxious and they let the doctor know they're anxious. The doctor goes through a series of questions. And sure enough, they're anxious enough that the doctor can prescribe some medicine. So do you think that medicine helps?
Yes, sometime.
So we looked at that as well, that mm. we looked at medicine by itself, we looked at therapy by itself, and we looked at medicine and therapy together. Mm-hmm. Medicine with therapy was the fastest route to someone feeling good. So having the medicine with the therapy helps someone feel good. If they were able to have the therapy, they were able to also develop maybe some skills, some new behaviors, some ways of dealing with their everyday life where they could become less anxious. When they then were weaned off the medicine, they didn't feel anxious anymore. Mm-hmm. There were those who only did medicine by itself.
Hmm. So they
never learned how to handle the situations.
It's like that you have a fever, but you just take something for the fever, but you don't know what is the original reason why you have fever.
You keep drinking the bad water in Mexico, and you don't know why you keep getting sick, but you keep taking pills to stop yourself from having diarrhea. But then you have another glass of water.
Yeah.
So you're not treating
the original problem.
And we'll look at that as well. What was the other? Oh, so if you just do therapy alone, the result was that you had a higher likelihood of reducing anxiety. It took longer, and people felt there was more effort involved because they were feeling anxious while they were doing it, but they were learning how to reduce anxiety. They were learning patterns of behavior. And so the hardest work was therapy alone, but it also gave the least chance of relapse. When there was medicine alone, it had the highest chance of relapse of being anxious.
Again.
And when there was medicine and therapy, that had a little higher chance of relapse than therapy alone. Now, it was much faster for people to feel better when the drugs were used. So the drugs are used supposedly to help you get through the transition of starting to be able to develop new behaviors and new ways of handling situations to become less anxious. That's what they're supposed to be for.
Yeah. But without therapy, how you do that? You just take the pill, no therapy,
absolutely. You just take the pill, and without therapy, you just feel a little better. But then a couple of months from now,
you go back to the
underlying situation's still there, and it sneaks on through, and now you're anxious again, and you switch to another anti-anxiety
and
drug.
Then the secondary effect for this kind of medicine, so you have additional issue too.
You can.
Yeah.
Because we're putting into our bodies drugs that aren't meant to be in our bodies.
Yeah.
Now, there are other treatments for it. So here are typical treatments for anxiety. Number one is therapy. Most widely used is cognitive behavioral therapy, teaching you new behaviors and new thought patterns to help deal with
the
issues
situation
and anxiety.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the 13-year-old girl named Olivia, who would have test anxiety, and she would not be able to sleep at night. She felt all nervous and anxious when she took tests. She couldn't handle it. She didn't want to eat. She didn't want to sleep. She felt she was going to do terribly. So the cognitive behavioral therapist said, well, what's your thought? What do you think? She said she was afraid that she was going to fail. And because of that, she didn't want people to laugh at her. So then the therapist asked, well, how do you actually do? What actually happens on tests? And she says, well, I usually get maybe up to a B, but I've never failed. So the therapist asks, is it a rational thought that you're going to fail and people are going to laugh at you? And the therapist made Olivia think about how she was thinking, right? Thinking about how she was thinking about tests. And then she realized that if she studied hard, and this was working with the therapist, if she studied hard, she typically will do okay, and she's not going to fail. And so that was her mantra. Basically, that's what she programmed herself with.
Yeah.
Hey, I studied hard. I will probably do pretty well. I'm not going to fail. That made her reduce her anxiety, allowed her to sleep.
Yeah, and also sometimes I say, if I fail, what is the worst scenario? You know, you have opportunity maybe to repeat the test. Yes, okay. So fail is something that I used 3 weeks ago when I training, and I have people with scared for the test. And right. I say, you have the opportunity to repeat the test. So don't feel stressed doing. And then, because when you are in stress, you're blocking also. You have many knowledge. And then in the moment of the test, you maybe don't pass.
Right. Fear stops you from being able to expand the options that are in front of you. It makes you focus very strictly on the fear. And it takes away that
All knowledge,
creativity,
all situation,
the ability to look for answers. So by saying, hey, if you don't pass this, you can take it again. Mm-hmm. Now I don't worry about not passing. Now I start looking for answers.
Yeah.
I look for options too. So it's like solutions. If you have time to find a solution, and if you pick the wrong solution, you're not going to get in trouble, then maybe you'll come up with a good creative solution that's better than if somebody tells you, you need a solution, but if you pick the wrong one, you're in trouble. Well, now I'm like stuck.
Yeah.
My options and creativity are out the window.
Yeah.
So we talked about cognitive behavioral therapy. Medicine, we talked about that in a moment ago. Doctors can prescribe medicine like SSRIs, so it helps stop serotonin from being taken back into your, it's the reuptake inhibitor. So it stops serotonin from leaving its availability in your body, in your brain. So it leaves it there longer to help reduce your anxiety. There's also benzodiazepine, which I really don't know much about, but these are things that are supposed to reduce anxiety. But it reduces anxiety by causing things to happen in your body that aren't natural, right? It helps deal with the symptoms, but not the underlying problem, once again. Nutrition. Oh, so that's a way we can deal with anxiety. And you're like, well, how come? Bad nutrition can cause stress on the body. Stress on the body can cause stress on your brain.
Yeah.
I'm thinking. So nutrition is very important. That food can, like sugar, caffeine, junk food.
Yeah.
It may taste good, but with our body not getting the proper nutrition, anxiety. Is anxiety a survival mechanism? We get anxious because our body thinks we're being threatened, our survival is being threatened. We talked about that, didn't we? That in the old days, remember the old days when like you'd walk down the street and a lion would chase you or a bear?
Yeah.
And you had to immediately figure out how to react? That's anxiety. It's supposed to help you figure out how to do something. It's like fear in a way, right?
Yeah.
So it's fear. Without bears and tigers, we're being fearful of life.
If how many light I have in my Instagram. Yeah. Oh, I feel so bad for that. Some people, that's the first scared part.
So our bodies react to irrational fears the same way they would react to real fears. So, but for instance, two people disliked what I just posted, and now I have anxiousness. So I need to take my medication. Yeah. And we're talking about that. Now we're walking down the street and a tiger comes running at us. Well, all I need is my medicine and I'll be fine.
Yeah, because the tigers don't like drug.
Just say no.
Yeah.
It's Nancy Reagan's tiger. Just say no to drugs. That's what she said. So we talked about nutrition being good for you. Exercise releases endorphins, which can make you feel better, feel calmer. I always feel better after exercise. Right?
Me too.
Yeah. It's a nice thing to do. And plus, just getting your body moving helps get, say, the digestive system moving as well.
Yeah.
So it helps in more aspects than that. And then sleep. You can really cause somebody a lot of problems by not allowing them to sleep. Sleep deprivation is one of those forms of torture.
Yeah.
Don't do it to yourself.
Yeah.
Now, when you're on your phone late at night or you're on your computer late at night, this is one of the problems that we have today that we didn't have in the 1980s. People weren't on their computers or on their phones. Maybe they were playing their Nintendo if it existed.
Yeah.
But they really didn't have the opportunity to waste time on the blue screen at night and not get sleep.
Yeah.
talking to their friends and then being upset because someone said something bad about them and then having to deal with it and then not getting sleep. So they got anxiety from being on the computer, on social media. Mm-hmm. We talked about it, is that what it was, something like anybody who spends more than 2 hours on social media a day or on computer a day has a likelihood of being diagnosed as depressed or anxious.
Yeah.
And that's 60%. It's like a huge amount of people who are on, especially kids, on social media every day. So there's no wonder we've got a lot of people who are anxious as children growing up into anxious adults.
Yeah, yeah. And they copy behavior, you know, the kid copy the behavior of the parents.
So the highest percentage of people who are claiming to be anxious are 12 to 25-year-olds. They have the highest levels of anxiety. Mm-hmm. So the parents who are dealing with life's problems, they have to figure out how to make ends meet. They have to see where that next paycheck is coming from. They have to figure out what to do when COVID is around. They're not claiming the anxiousness as much as the 12 to 25-year-olds who are just getting started in life. We can say two things. One is maybe you get numbed down in life over time and you figure out how to deal with these things as you get older. Or maybe the situation is different. These 12-year-olds, these 25-year-olds are more socially active. They're more connected to the internet. They're more connected to their friends and on social media. And this is one of those driving forces of anxiety.
Yeah. And then you have the opportunity to put a title with something that you feel that maybe you don't know. Oh, I feel weird, you know? So but right now when I see ABC is excited, okay, I have like
that's
that.
That's what I have.
Yeah, so that you have a title for something that you feel.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate. We're talking about USA, United States of Anxiety, how anxiety is taking over the United States, and I bet you around the world, as one of the leading causes of, we'll call it medical challenges.
Yeah.
Right? So it's one of the highest, 40 million people in the U.S. every year suffer from anxiety. Not all year long, as we talked about, but over a year-long time frame.
And most of these people take the medicine.
And a lot more people take medicine than are actually involved in therapy.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a good business.
So we're talking about you step on a nail. So now you've got a nail in your foot. Mm. You take a very strong painkiller, and the nail's in your shoe, it's in your foot, but you don't feel it anymore. So now you just keep going amongst the day like normal, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't feel it.
You're going to start to take another pill.
You take another pill. Right? So we don't deal with the nail in our shoe. What is the root cause? I've got a nail in my shoe. Okay, I pull the nail out of my shoe. What do? Now I take a painkiller. Now I put a bandage. I do maybe some physical therapy to get my foot back into shape. Mm-hmm. And my foot comes back strong. And during that process, I wean off of the painkiller. Right? The pain being the symptom. We get rid of the medicine that's dealing with the pain when we have dealt with the underlying issue, right? Do we do that with anxiety?
It's difficult because it's not physical and people don't realize, okay, it's a foot, it's a injury, you can see your skin.
Not that obvious.
It's not obvious like this inside your brain.
Yeah, so anxiety is like one of those hidden causes. We have to look for the root cause. Mm-hmm. What is it? Here are a couple of things that we found listed out there as being potential root causes. Number one, oh, look at that, social media. Perfect lives of other people online. Perfect lies, we should say, of other people, because most people don't have perfect lives.
Nobody has a perfect life.
I mean, we do, but we're special.
I always joke with my mama like that. The only perfect we are.
So a teen feels anxious after comparing their body to someone else who's posted photo edited pictures of themselves online. Mm-hmm. Or after seeing a whole bunch of supermodels online going, oh, I'm anxious about how I look. Mm-hmm. So irrational, realistic expectations.
Mm-hmm.
How about news media? Well, the news media, the whole idea of the news media years ago was, here's the news. Over time, news media has become a for-profit industry. How do you get people to watch your TV station, read your magazine, look at your blog post? You want to be confrontational. You want to drive emotion. These emotions that they drive are anxiety-producing stories.
Yeah, and then you exaggerate or distortion the title of the news because you want the people reading. Based upon that, maybe it's not real history, but you need to catch more view.
Right.
And then you become more, oh, you see that? You see that? You see that? When you're eating all these exaggeration info.
I twist the story a little bit so there's an essence of truth to it. I omit something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I put something in that really wasn't there.
It's like
there.
The statistic and the graph sometimes.
Yeah, statistics.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they're also, you know, you talk about the news media, they cover politicians. And politicians, the number one thing is, again, to drive emotion. How do you get votes? You need people to be emotionally charged. People who go, oh, that's logical. Logical people don't go out and vote.
Never.
Angry people.
Yes.
People who really want something to be passed because they're passionate about it. So angry and passionate people vote.
That's just my people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how things get done. So politicians are always sowing fear. And most of the time it's irrational. And most of the time it's lies from all sides.
Yeah.
Except us, because we only tell the truth because we're engineers.
We are light right now.
Could be. Religion. Some people feel judged by a strict set of rules that have been imposed by their religion, their culture, their family. Maybe they look at their friends and go, I can't live up to my friends' expectations. And now they're anxious. So religion can cause anxiety. Relationships. Oh, toxic friendships. Sometimes we're like anxious. We don't know why. Now we go and we want to get treated for anxiety, but we are not willing to remove our toxic friendships and toxic relationships from our lives.
And also the people who is anxious first see connection with other people they have anxious to, because it's like the club, you know, the team. And then you increase versus they see, oh, somebody is so relaxing, is so normal, oh, it's so worrying. I like to be with people like me. And sometimes people like me, if I am anxious, I can create more.
Somebody under medical care for anxiety today is much more accepted than it was in the 1980s as well.
Yeah.
There are benefits to that because then people will seek and get treatment.
Mm-hmm.
But there are negatives as well, where it can be a Me Too club. I want to pay my friends.
Yeah.
You know, and plus the drugs I'm hearing are really good.
Yeah. And there's a sitting and open the I have these, you have these, oh, I have that. Wow.
Like the ADHD drugs. Oh, they're so good. I can stay awake and study better.
Yeah.
Well, I can pay attention because I have ADHD, or you know what? I'm going to pretend to have ADHD because I really like the drug.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you my story with ADHD.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you call, what is it? Do I have it? Well, it's a spectrum of behaviors that I fall into the category of not being able to pay attention during different things, getting distracted for different ways. And I was diagnosed by a doctor as saying, oh, you have ADHD. But ADHD is like,
When you play solitario, how do you not have ADHD?
As soon as the cards start moving, I'm like, wow.
Yeah, so you'll be really focused in the game. So you don't have any problem.
You can be really focused on things. So people who know is that you can be hyper-focused, and then you can be ignoring what you should be doing.
Yes, when some wife talking with you and you are worried the topic is not interesting, you start to see like that. You say, oh, you hear the pump?
You hear the pump? Do you see the squirrel?
Yeah, you see the butterfly?
The butterfly. What butterfly?
Mm-hmm.
I see the caterpillar who's going to turn into a butterfly. It's amazing. You want to watch it
Wait
for it. How about mental? Just in our own heads, when we're overthinking, we're either thinking about the past or the future.
Mm-hmm.
And past and future thinking is as real to us as what's going on right now. And we're focused on an irrational potential future, right? Or we're thinking about something that happened 20, 30, 40 years ago, and we're constantly thinking about it. We are reinforcing that in our mind. I was having a conversation with a friend the other day about somebody who keeps saying they're sorry for something that happened 40 years ago. And they're like, I don't want to talk to that person anymore because they keep focusing on that. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, if they keep focusing on that, they keep reinforcing those portions of their brain which are focused on what happened at that point in time. They're actually growing their brain in past trauma.
Yeah.
Their trauma's growing over time because they're focusing on it mm-hmm. rather than focusing on all the other things, mm-hmm. seeking therapy for that, but moving on to active things you can do to grow in a different direction. Maybe something like we talk about is we help an orphanage. You focus on how you can help somebody. Yeah. And then maybe in doing that, that actually connects those past traumas to something good that you're doing now. Mm-hmm. And it actually gives you a reason for what you're doing now. And now you look at the trauma as something that moved you to doing something really good for other people rather than something that stopped you for your life.
Mm-hmm.
Just a thought.
That is a good analysis.
How about emotional? In relationships, you may feel like you don't have the ability to express how you're feeling mm-hmm. to your partner. Maybe because you're scared how they're going to react, or maybe you don't want to hurt them.
Or maybe you don't have the tool to express your emotion. It's not easy to express also some emotion that you believe is hurt, like you said, somebody, or hurt yourself. You don't want to open the door for this.
Yeah, you'd rather close the door and just stay in your room and not mm-hmm. say anything.
And acting like the HDAD, what is it called?
There's the squirrel again.
Yeah, the squirrel again, yeah.
How about physical illness, pain? When you are physically ill, there's something physically going on with you that can cause you to be anxious. I'm not going to be able to go on the vacation with the other people because my leg hurts, because I have this disease I'm getting over. I can't climb the mountain because there are pine trees and I've got a pine allergy. That these things can make you anxious.
Yeah.
And so physical challenges can create anxiety as well. Spiritual. When you're questioning why I'm here on earth.
Yeah, they feel what is the purpose
alone.
For your life. Yeah.
Yeah, you feel like, why am I here? Even with all these people around me, I'm like, why am I here? How mm-hmm. did I get here?
Mm-hmm.
What happens after I'm here? And if you start thinking darkly about these things, they can cause a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
Many years ago, that occurred to me.
Yeah?
Yeah. I told you when I went in for that medical procedure, and they knocked me out for 3 hours, and it went by like 15 seconds. Knocked out, back up. 3 hours went by, and it disappeared. And it got me like just thinking about how time can go that quickly when you're not able to think, when your brain isn't thinking, that you close your eyes and open it, and 3 hours have gone past.
Yeah.
Could the same thing happen over 100 years? Knock you out, you wake up, and it's 100 years later. I got to this dark place of starting to really think about that for a long time, and it bothered me.
Hmm.
Yeah, I shared that a little bit with you.
How you remove that?
I ignore it now.
You use AID again? You be distracting?
Yeah, distract myself, something else. At some point you go, I can't do anything about this.
Mm-hmm.
I can keep thinking about it, or I can just move on to something else. Like, I'll play the piano, I'll play the guitar, I'll go to work, I'll go
or
exercise.
Or leave the present, because I say the best technique is put your brain in right now. So how are you sitting? How is your feet in the chair? How is your hand mm-hmm. touching each other? How is your shoulder? How is the temperature of the room? So when you practice that, you come into the right now, and that your brain stay in the reality versus jumping in the dark side.
So irrational fear of the future, irrational spending too much time in the past. You can cure that by thinking about the present.
Mm-hmm.
The present is where we can do action, and only the present is where we can do action. We can think differently now. We can read differently now. We can move differently now. We can do something that changes our trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what we talked about in a relationship was, what is the trajectory of the relationship? You can't just think, well, in the future I will do, or, hey, in the past we did. It's what can we do now to change what we do a week from now?
Mm-hmm.
But we have to be on a path and make small progress towards that. It almost fits directly in with cognitive behavioral therapy. You want small steps that give you constant rewards.
Yeah.
Because rewarding your small achievements makes you want to continue to have small achievements, which move you to your goal.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't want to get into B.F. Skinner and operant conditioning right now, but that was like one of the things we talked about.
Yeah.
How about gut bacteria?
I told you that's the power for your brain.
Yeah, the biome in your gut, mm-hmm. whether you've got good bacteria, bad bacteria, the wrong bacteria, it can make you feel sick, it can make you feel healthy, it can make you feel depressed. Did you know, do I remember this, that like 90% of your serotonin is produced from your gut bacteria?
Wow.
Do I remember this correctly?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Somebody, please. I will actually look it up and I'll post it as we put our show up online. But I believe that is the case, is that the proper gut bacteria not only heals your intestines, protects you from viruses and bacteria, makes you feel good, digests your food to give you the proper nutrients, but also produces all these other chemicals, or at least the precursors to these chemicals, which are feel-good chemicals. It all comes from your gut. You are what you eat. And
the real food, because that's something. I see the post that you sent me this morning about the guy with the beef, with the fat, with something natural. And yes,
he was talking about eating beef, vegetables, fruit. He was talking about fermented foods. What are we talking about? The
bread.
Sauerkraut.
Sauerkraut.
Right? Sauerkraut.
Yeah.
Bread's made from yeast. You have other things that come from fermenting food.
Yeah.
And those
cheese.
Fermentation of food is, our stomach has those same bacteria in it. And these things, this food feeds our gut.
Mm-hmm.
They say you are what you eat, but it's really you are what your gut bacteria eat.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's bad food, you end up feeding bad gut bacteria. The bad gut bacteria, the ones with the leather jackets that have the skull and crossbones on it, those are the ones that survive. They beat up all the other gut bacteria, and then they start robbing you of your health. So you want to feed the good ones, the ones that are there, the ones that are patching, the walls, they're filling in the cracks, they're making sure bad stuff doesn't get into your intestines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the good one.
They're the defense. They're protecting you.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions.
We're coming back to you talking about anxiety, the United States of anxiety. Hey, anxiety is like the number one issue across the board in the United States. A lot of it caused by social media, news, things that are going on, the complexity of today's life and living.
And how, finance,
how we're not dealing with things that we should be dealing with.
You cannot pay the mortgage, you cannot keep your job, so all this is
let's go the opposite way and go, so is a lot of anxiety caused by scarcity thinking?
Yes.
Yeah. You asked this question, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
The scarcity mindset. Always feeling like you don't have enough time, money, love, safety, cars.
Yes.
Scarcity. We feel the things we don't have. And a lot of it is we have so many things, but it's always what we don't have.
Mm-hmm. We focus on what we don't have, not what we have.
We grow up in an environment where our kids have iPhones, they have cars, they have insurance, they have homes to live in, they have food, they have social media, they have everything. And then they talk about how they can't make it. It's so difficult to make it in this world.
But that is an interesting interview that I see when the people say, I recognize that I am house, I have a house, I have a good job, I have a family, but I feel scared.
Yeah.
I feel anxious. So why?
Yep.
And the doctor say it's because you don't want to lose these. So when you think
fear of loss,
these conditions that you are so good right now that you feel, oh, now coming something back. It's some scenario is not real because you are figured out something. And this is your scare for lose also everything that you have already.
Right, right. I can understand.
Yeah.
Having gone through cycles in my life, you understand that you can have ups and downs, and it can be tough. And even when you're in a good place, you remember the bad place and you think,
yeah, can be again there.
Right.
Yeah.
And then other people, they probably have no fear whatsoever.
Yeah.
I'll just bankrupt the company and start again.
Enjoy.
Enjoy it. Yes. Whatever it might be. Root cause. So humans evolve to worry about survival, right? And you survive by having food, shelter, mm-hmm. clothing. These things were really important. So if you couldn't figure out where food was going to come from tomorrow, scarcity, mm-hmm. you would be scared for your survival. But now we're not even scared for the basic things on Maslow's hierarchy, the needs of food and clothing and shelter, that those are the things that we're not even afraid of. We're afraid to lose our social status. We're afraid to lose our car. We're afraid to lose
our
iPhone.
How people see us. People are so concerned how
the reputation,
the society see your, say, and it's a social,
right?
Social Likes. Media that we grew up with this way, and it's so valued, sometimes unconscious, the how people see you. So you need to show something that maybe you don't feel, but you need to show it like that.
So there was an old Saturday Night Live skit of it's better to look good than to feel good. So social media is the aspect of looking good.
Yeah.
Internally, you can feel terrible, but as long as you present yourself in the media and social media as everything's great, that's what we're focusing on. And then you see other people and you see their fake projection.
Mm-hmm.
And you take it as a reality that not only do they look good, but they must feel great because look at everything. But they're just like you in the same situation where you're trying to project things as being great, but maybe you are worried. Maybe you feel scarcity. Maybe you're worried about losing something. So we don't want to focus on that. Let's focus on, what is that? Gratitude and abundance.
Yeah. Thinking how you can set your mind to reduce this kind of this care. I don't want to call anxious. You know, what is the difference between scared and anxious? So?
Scared and anxious. Well, scarcity can make you feel anxious, right? Scared can also be other things. Scared now. And there's the projection, too. So I can be scared right now because of something that is impending right now. So again, focusing on the present. The present is a bear's walking out of the woods towards me. That is fear and scared right now. My survival is threatened. I feel scared.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you can feel anxious at the same time.
Yeah, well, I can feel anxious, but if I feel anxious, I'm like, let me think about this. Am I anxious? Whereas anxiety would be the fear of the bear walking out of the woods tomorrow.
Okay.
That's anxious.
Okay.
Or I'm in front of the woods right now. There is no bear, but I'm thinking any second now the bear could come out. That's anxious. Fear is more like the bear appeared. Whoa. And now I react. We kind of meld between those two things, don't we? That we take something that is meant to help us, fear, and it's meant to help us right now react and move. And we've changed that into now I'm afraid of something happening tomorrow, which is being scared or anxious of something that might happen tomorrow. Or I think of something that happened in the past and what somebody might be thinking about me that I don't even know about, and I'm anxious about that.
So I can say the anxious is a long time scare.
Yeah, well, it's to me, again, a fear of, not fear, but it's thinking that something might happen that isn't happening right now. Okay. And it's a constant, what do they call that? When a chronic, it's like a chronic fear rather than a fear which is happens and goes, because like fear is here. Where, you know, who was it, JFK, who said the only thing that we should fear is fear itself or something like that, is that fear is, if we're fearing something in the future, it's more of an anxiety. That fear as an emotion, you know, where you express it in the face, is more meant to be a survival instinct reaction.
And again, it's not see fear like something bad, because it can help you.
It helps you survive.
Yes.
And I just want to remind our audience, when we talk about stuff, we talk about it how we view it. I don't even care what the traditional sense of the psychologist thinks. It is a theory. It is a categorization that when you talk about Paul Ekman, mm-hmm. Paul Ekman did the study of
micro
expressions and expressions and how across the board in all different areas of the world, people have certain expressions for fear, for happiness, for sadness, mm-hmm. for surprise, and that these emotions that pop up instantly in someone's face are an indication of how they're feeling. And across cultures, across ethnicities, yeah. that they exist. And in fact, they can also exist in many of the animal species that show teeth mm-hmm. when they're angry. And, you know, that they can, yes, they do that
the
stuff.
Cat, the yeah, ice.
When maybe the sad dog, yeah. or maybe when they're trying to get something out of you, the nuanced emotions. Mm-hmm. But they're also trying to categorize vast, widely nuanced behavioral processes into something that make it easy to share with somebody else and to then be able to do further research.
Yeah, and also the one interesting psychology say the academy separate psychology versus any other doctor, and then they say you can psychology psychiatry because mm-hmm. they say you are one person. You not separate your head and go to one department versus your body. When you mention the gut bacteria, the what did you eat, if you're any kind of the muscle problem.
Right.
So you need to see the psychology and psychiatry need to see the human completely versus it's just your mind.
And can they? And does a psychologist doesn't do that necessarily.
No. So
and the medical doctor doesn't either.
They say we don't have any course about good food. Mm. So what is the good food? We don't have any course in all academy for doctors to say about what kind of food the people can eat.
Right. And you listen to 25 different doctors on Instagram or wherever, even ones that are well known, and they have different thoughts about it. For instance, the one that I was sharing with you this morning, I believe he had another post talking about how eggs and meats were talked negatively by doctors, and cereal became the low fat,
yeah.
high carb diets of what was that, the 70s, maybe the 60s, who knows,
yeah.
is that cereal became big. You know, you eat cereal, have milk in the morning, and, you know, it does a body good. And then you start looking at what's in cereal, and it's dried this and fortified that, and go, well, what's in an egg yolk? Well, it's 100% of what a body needs, but it's got cholesterol. Oh, but now it's not bad for you. Wait a
before
minute.
Cholesterol, you need to have yeah. low cholesterol. Yeah. Now, high cholesterol, say
your,
you.
Your brain needs cholesterol. Yeah. So. I need cholesterol in order to float. You know, but,
and save your life.
And save yeah. your life. So cholesterol, excess fat may save your life one day if you're floating.
Yeah.
But all seriousness not aside, that diet's very important. This was just a year ago when we started looking at the bacteria in the gut, and that you're born with 1,000 species of bacteria in your gut, and doctors, researchers only can identify about 500 of those species. They don't know what the other ones are.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look, there's Gus, and then there's the outlaw biker gang of bacteria. But what's this one? I don't know. It's an alien bacteria. Who
immigrants.
Knows? But your gut bacteria will become part of you for your life. And does the psychologist look at gut bacteria? No, because we're only thinking about how we think.
Yeah, but this not is all the business, all the department.
But how I work out and what foods I eat don't impact how I think and how good I feel about mm-hmm. different things and how happy I am?
Yeah.
Wow. And so the doctor who says, you hurt your finger, take some ibuprofen. Well, how did you hurt your finger? Well, every day I slam it in my door of the car because I can't reach a certain thing because of where I park my car. Well, maybe park your car in a different spot.
Or maybe he can see well.
Can't see well.
The problem is the problem is in the glasses. Yeah.
Are you trying to say something?
What? Where are you?
Let's end this. Here's some questions about anxiety. This is one. You're anxious. So what are you afraid of may happen if you don't worry about what you're worrying about? So like what you said is, what's the worst thing that can happen? So like if you stop worrying about the thing you're worrying about, what might happen?
Yeah.
And then you think about it rationally rather than worry, okay, if this happens, this, this, and this, will you survive? Because if it comes down to survival, and that's really how come your body's acting the way it is, if you can teach yourself that, hey, I will survive, like that song from the 70s, that when you start thinking that way, is that no matter what, I'm going to survive, maybe your anxiety comes down a little bit. I'm going to figure out a way. It's not so bad. How about, when did I first start feeling this way? Well, I became anxious in 1972.
You remember?
When I heard that, when I heard that first Bee Gees song, it really made me anxious. No, I, you know, who knows? What part of life feels out of control or unsafe? So when you lack control or you feel your survival is being threatened, this is where anxiety comes from. So what part of your life feels... So if you just have anxiety in its general and you have to face it, it's like, what are the questions to ask? And these are three of the questions. These actually come from cognitive behavioral therapists. It's part of the tools that they use and questions they ask of patients. So they're very powerful. So here are some approaches as we end our session on anxiety. How to end anxiety? The abundance mindset. Start thinking about all the things that you do have, right? Number one, rather than the scarcity.
Practice what you don't have.
And practice gratitude. Be thankful. Because when you focus on what you're thankful for, you'll see all the things that you're thankful for. It will reduce your anxiety. Take action. If you take action, you're focused on what you can do right now. When you're focused on the now, you're not focused on the worry of the future or reliving the past. Remember what we said, by doing action, positive action that may be triggered by the trauma you had 20 years ago, but you get positive results of something you're doing now in response, you're going to build protection around the trauma, meaning you're going to reframe the trauma as a reason, as a catalyst for good you're doing. And you may be upset about the trauma, but you may see how you can impact the benefit of other people's lives. So I think that's real important.
Yeah, and also how you can become strong after the drama, because every drama has some lesson learned. So be focused on what did you learn and how you can maybe help other people with the same drama.
Yeah, so and I'm going to say trauma and drama, whichever it is, that if you can rebound from it and help others, it will help reduce your anxiety quicker.
Yeah.
Cognitive behavioral therapy, we've talked about that a bunch, but mind and action. Change how you think, change how you act, but you have to be focused on the now. Health, nutrition, exercise, sleep.
Yeah.
I don't think we have to restate that. Health, nutrition, exercise, sleep.
We have many shows about that.
And then finally, anxiety is a growing problem, especially around the youth. We haven't been able to put our finger on if it is real, if it's partially real, but a lot of it is societally induced. And I think we'll leave it at that, that we don't mask our symptoms. We don't just take a drug so we don't feel the symptom, but we look at the symptom like the nail in our foot, and the pain in our foot is not just something to mask. It's to figure out what the root cause is. Remove the nail, maybe have the medicine to help us reduce the pain while we're healing, but work on the fix. It's much easier to identify a physical issue than a mental challenge, but we have to go about it in the same way. We have to figure out what is causing the trauma, what's causing the anxiety, what's causing what we feel is the scarcity or the threat to our survival. And we have to think about it. What's the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen might be
nothing. Sometimes we create a big history, maybe. I use a lot of these. What is the worst scenario if I not do that? And I said, nothing. So what I have to be worried?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate our audience being with us this week. Thank you for listening to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
We hope to see you in the upcoming show.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.